Growing the Game with Ballsy is a podcast dedicated to growing the game of football in Saskatchewan. Each week, Michael Ball will talk with Rider guests, but he'll also highlight amateur athletes, coaches, and builders in this province growing the game we love. Now, here's Ballsy.
All right, Growing the Game podcast brought to you by our friends at Mako Collision Repair. If you've had an oh-oh and want it perfect again, better get Mako Collision Repair. Go see them over there at 2330 7th Avenue. Now, we're going to talk to the third ever-born Canadian umpire, first one from Regina, Stuart Sherwater. How are you, Stu?
I'm doing well, Ballsy. Thank you very much for having me on.
Hey, thanks. It's a pleasure to have you on the podcast. We'll get into the baseball thing in a second, but this is a podcast dedicated to growing the game of football in Saskatchewan. So let's start there, because before you got big time into baseball, you were a football guy. Tell us about your football career.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually grew up in Regina playing football majority of my sports life. Played RMF, played all the way through Pee Wee, Bantam, high school, went on to Thunder after high school. So, yeah, definitely football was, I guess, one of my dreams initially to possibly play in the CFL one day, and that didn't happen. But but no, it definitely was one of my passions growing up was football.
What did you play in football? What were your positions?
I was mostly defensive, defensive end. Again, high school, a lot of times a two-way player, offensive lineman as well. But definitely in the trenches majority of my days.
What did you like about football, Stuart?
You know, it was just, I'm always a kid growing up. You like the contact sports, but that's been the strategy too. Definitely defensively, I was big into, reading the offensive formations, you know, just one-on-one trying to beat a guy, the strategic part of the game. Going back, doing film, trying to find the better ways, reading the offensive lineups and seeing what we can do. But, no, that was definitely, a strategic point, was one of my favorite things to do.
Just to kind of paint a word picture for people, who are some of the guys you played with that we might know that you played in the football circles with?
Well, definitely in high school I played against. Like, I went to Belfer, but John Ryan, he was in at Sheldon at the time.
Yeah.
When I was in the Thunder, Chris Getzlaff was on there. Ben Hebert, who's out in the Olympics right now, I played with him in the Thunder days.
Yeah.
So those were probably some of the biggest names that I played with.
You know, it's funny. You mentioned some of these guys, and of course, John Ryan, the first ever Saskatchewanian, only one to win a Super Bowl to this point. Ben Hebert, an Olympic gold medalist, and now he'll try to go for bronze here in Korea. But now Stuart Sherwater joins that list as a really accomplished guy in the world of baseball. What led you down the path to be an umpire? Like, take us back to your young days. How did you decide to go from football to being an umpire?
Well, I was, I was active in a lot of sports when I was a kid. Very athletic. I like to think so, at least. I played a lot of sports, and I played baseball. Wasn't very good at it. Just kind of did it for fun. And then, as I started to get, a little bit older in baseball, the game started to get a little too fast. Couldn't do as much with the ball. Couldn't hit very hard. So I really enjoyed the game. So I just, one of my friends I played baseball with, umpired on the side, just making a couple bucks, and he's like, why don't you come umpire with me this weekend? I was like, sure. So, did a clinic and kind of got involved in the Regina Baseball Umpires Association here in the city, and just kind of when I was like 13, 14, 15 years old, and just kind of made some extra side cash, doing little tournaments on the weekend, night games on the weekdays, and then kind of grew from there. I played it all, or as I was playing football, I was umpiring still, and then even to my Thunder days, I was still doing both, and I joined into the Canadian Baseball, Baseball Canada's program, and traveled the country doing some baseball tournaments. And at one point, I was just kind of like, I don't think football is really working out, and baseball has really been successful, and some guys are kind of pushing me towards pro school down south, and I decided to try that. And one off season of football, I tried the pro school, and that kind of hooked me, and got in through that way.
Yeah, so pro school, tell us, take us behind the scenes there. So how do you learn how to become an ump? Like, what do you learn at that pro school?
You learn everything. I went down to Harry Wendelstedt Umpire School, and it's in Daytona Beach, Florida. It's about a five-week program. It runs in January into February. But you start from learning how to put your hat on, mask on properly, to dissecting the rule book every page. We go over every single rule, every single word in that rule book's been covered, drills on, how to proper footwork, just learning the the two-person system, learn the three-person system, and then eventually, not at school, but you learn the four-person system. And that it's definitely something that school is just gives you that good foundation of day in, day out of just dissecting umpiring to a hole to get you prepared for professional baseball.
Joining us here, Stuart Sherwater, Regina-born Major League umpire. He's going to be full-time this year for the first time. We'll get into that in a second. So as we're, you know, you talk about the rule book. Do you have a photographic memory? How hard is it to remember those rules on the fly?
No, I do not have a photographic memory at all. But it's just something like anything in any trade, in life in general, you need to work hard at things like that. And we need to stay in the rule book in the off season. You need to always, there's always changes. There are always manual adjustments that we need to be just aware of. And just getting your nose in there, just like you are in school, you got to study them. The book does contradict itself a little bit and bounces back and forth. So you really got to, work hard at it. It's not something easy. It doesn't come easy to a lot of people. And you know what? It doesn't come easy to me. But it's just something that you need to, that I need to work at, and always keep my nose in there for sure.
How do you feel about instant replay, Stu?
You know, I'm all for it. If we can go to bed every night and have no plays, wrong on our end, I can go to sleep and know, maybe I got an overturn, but I got it right in the end. And, you know, I'm all for it. So it's definitely, I think it's umpire friendly for us, and it's good. It's a good product.
What was the welcome to the Major League moment for you? Do you remember your first game? What was who was playing, and what was your welcome to the Major League moment? Where, like, did you catch yourself and say, "Wow, I'm really here"?
Yeah, you do, because definitely the build up. My first game was in Dodgers Stadium, so there's a lot of history to that. Of course, I had my wife out with me, and the build up to it, and I'm not a very nervous person, but like in a locker room, you start to get a little nervous. But once you step on the field, it's just like going to the office every single day. It's still baseball. Yeah, there's a lot of people around you. There's a lot more cameras, but it's what I've been doing for the last, when I first stepped on my major league field was 7-8 years. So it's just another day in the office, really, what it comes down to. But definitely, there's definitely a wow factor when you look up and you see 55,000 people, and the stadium is gigantic, and it's something that it's kind of refreshing to say, yeah, I'm here. I finally got to touch a major league field.
Do you catch yourself? I mean, I know you gotta be on your game. Don't get me wrong, but you're a person too. You're a human. You're a sports fan. Okay, you grew up as a sports fan. Do you catch yourself watching some of these guys? Like, who are some of the guys you just like to watch? I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but like a Mike Trout or a Judge or something. Like, you're standing at the plate. You're the umpire behind home plate, and this big behemoth Aaron Judge comes to the plate. You're like, holy cow, this guy's big.
Yeah, no, you want Major League Baseball. These guys are the best of the best, and every night, day in, day out, they definitely they do something that makes you appreciate the game more or less. These guys are incredible athletes. Like you said, Aaron Judge is he's a humongous man who's very fast, very talented. Same with Mike Trout. These guys are just talented individuals. Where I guess as a person who enjoys sports and enjoys the game, to be on the same field as them and see these guys and how they perform is it's definitely a neat feeling for sure. But it's really incredible to see how talented these guys are, and pitchers, and how much these balls move when they're throwing. TV sometimes doesn't do justice what these balls are actually doing. It's really incredible to see from 60 foot 6 inches away these pitchers and how they work.
How cool is it for you, Stuart Sherwater, to be only the third Canadian ever to be a Major League Baseball umpire and the first from Regina?
It definitely is. I'm definitely proud to be Canadian. Definitely proud to do Canadian well in this. Like you said, there's only three of us that have ever been born in Canada, gone to reach this level. And to me, it's something I've always been working for. And to be Canadian is that much more special. Yeah, absolutely, it is. There hasn't been many of us, but at the same time, I encourage every other Canadian that would like to do something like this, because it's definitely doable. It doesn't matter where you're from, who you are. You work your tail off, you can do anything, and that's what I kind of live by.
That's an awesome message. We just got a couple more quick questions with Stuart Sherwater here, Major League Baseball umpire here from Regina. Fortunate to have him join us in the Growing the Game podcast here, brought to you by Mako. So I you know, when I'm watching these baseball games, I just marvel at, you know, you see how fast that ball's coming, and these guys must, you know, part of it for the batter is he's just got to guess on what pitch is coming because it's coming so fast. What about for you as an umpire when that ball's flying in there? I marvel at the eyesight, and are you kind of guessing a bit too? Like, just take us through that, because I marvel at that.
Yeah, no, you know, I wouldn't say guessing at all, really. It's something that I guess we're trained to do. They have a system in place where you work so many years through the minor leagues to get to the major leagues, and, you know, you learn in every pitch you take from the lower rookie ball leagues to the major leagues, and it's all about repetition. I've seen probably millions of pitches come at me, so you know, we're trained. We're trained to be in the best position, the best plate stance, to see the best that we can over top of the catcher, to make adjustments, to see that pitch and to see if it crosses that outside bottom corner. You know, it's just yeah. No, I wouldn't say guessing is the right word at all. I think it's just something that we've been trained to do, and that's why we're there.
Yeah, I didn't want to make it sound like you're guessing, because you are good at what you do. I guess what I'm saying is you watch a baseball player swing at it, and sometimes he's going to have to guess on which pitch it is, because that ball's flying in there. So really, really makes me marvel at what you guys do, and also because you got to stand in there and watch that that ball right till it hits the glove. So this leads me into my next question, Stu. What's the worst injury you've had, maybe behind the plate or whatever, when you're out in the field doing the bases?
You know, definitely there is a lot of injuries. People are surprising me a lot as an official. You don't think of it as much, but we're running around where, you know, when you're on the plate, you're doing them roughly around, you're squatting 300 times. So definitely, there's definitely, you do need to be in some physical shape for sure. And for us, I guess, that baseball is the devil to us. Getting hit by that baseball is what causes a lot of injuries. Our biggest one is concussions. When we're behind the plate, yeah, we got a mask on. It's got, you know, we have top of the line padding, the mask itself. But when a ball is coming at you 95 plus, then foul tipped off the bat to your face, it doesn't feel good. So and that's one of our biggest ones. And of course, there's always a scare. You're on the field, and you got some of these big boys swinging that bat, and they swing it hard. If you're just behind the pitcher instead of behind second, you know, by second base, you better be quick and on your toes, because that's coming right at you sometimes. So you got to be aware of that.
Yeah, no, for sure. Absolutely. Okay, Stuart Sherwater, I go back to July 27th, 2017. You're the home plate umpire. It's the Yankees. It's the Rays. There's a pitch just outside the plate. You called it a strike. Joe Girardi of the Yankees didn't like it. Tell us what you can tell us about that exchange.
Well, it's just part of our job. You know, we're going to get some right, we're going to get some wrong. You know, sometimes you could have a almost perfect game, and you know, as a plate umpire, but you're going to miss them. Like you said, these balls are coming in pretty darn quick, and we got to make a split reaction decision. And you know, Girardi just didn't like the call in that situation, and he wanted to express his feelings to me. So, and that's just part of the game. That's part of the what you sign up for as an umpire, that you're going to get in some of these arguments, and it could be at Yankee Stadium, it could be on a backfield here at Columbus Park. You know, as an umpire, that's what we. That's what you kind of sign up for. So, no, it's definitely it's something. Ejections are going to happen as an umpire, and arguments, and sometimes they get a little media spotlight. And, you know, I know that one did a little bit, but every situation is different, and you got to handle it differently. And, yeah, that's what it is.
Did you end up throwing him out? You weren't demonstrative. You just put your mask back on. I saw him walk into the dugout, then he went out of the picture. Did you end up throwing him out?
Yeah, he was throwing out before he got out of the dugout.
Okay.
He was, so before he even came out at me, he was already ejected from the game. And then he came out and, I guess, wanted to express his feelings of what he thought.
Hey, what did your colleagues think? You're a young guy, Yankee Stadium, a veteran manager comes out. Did you get praise from the hierarchy or some of your colleagues?
Yeah, no, definitely. You know, it's just, and that's, I guess, one of our, as a call-up umpire at the time that I was, is, we got to earn our stripes too. And that was a situation that, you know, the guys I was working on the field with were had my back. They, you know, they thought I handled it around the situation well. And I think the guys, they were really supportive of my decision on ejecting at the time I did. And and how I handled myself during the situation when I guess we were in the argument.
Okay, I got two more quick questions for you. First off, just to highlight to us how tough it is to become a Major League Baseball umpire. Like, how many they accept each year? How many are actually active?
There's 76 of us active on staff right now, and you know, there's not much turnover. There's some guys that that have 40 years in this position, so the turnover isn't much for sure. I don't know the exact number of you know, ratio of how many umpires enter the game to get called up, but you know, one thing we always said at umpire school is, like, we have a class of about 200 people at umpire school. When I went in 2007 was my first year, but out of the 200, they always say one person from this class will be a Major League umpire. So just there's your odds right there. Just when you step into to umpire school, of the odds of getting in. Now, my class, fortunately, there was actually a couple of two, three of us that got in, and that's just sometimes just how the, you know, the cookies crumble. Sometimes there's more job openings are happening. Sometimes it's just timing. You know, there was a stretch where they didn't hire guys for 3, 4, 5 years. Now, you know, fortunate enough, every year we're at least, you know, we've had at least one hire in these last few years. So it's definitely, there's no, I guess there's no rhythm or rhyme to it. Yeah. It's all about when guys retire. If, you know, sometimes injuries force guys out. It's just, I guess it's all about timing and being in the right place at the right time, being the top, I guess, of your supervisors, of the, you know, I guess of their charts, and being ready to step on the door when we're ready.
Is it a tough nut to crack? Like, when you get in there, are you well received by the old guard?
Yeah, you know, I definitely, you know, it's just like anything. Yeah, you got to earn your stripes. You got to go through. You're the low guy in the crew, so you got to, you know, you're definitely gonna respect the guys you work with that have got a lot more time, the veterans, and you know, definitely, I think you just got to be yourself. I just be myself. I'm a joking kind of guy. I like to, you know, mess around. I like to keep it light in the locker room. So you know, I'm not gonna not be somebody who I'm not. I'm gonna be myself, and you know, I think that goes a long ways.
Hey, a low guy on the totem pole, Stu. Does that mean you like? Does the older guys get, you know, I'll do Yankee Stadium, I'll do Fenway Park, I'll do Chavez Ravine, or how does that work when you're the low guy in the pole? Do you have the, you know, what you, certain games you do or you don't do?
No, not at all. We go straight rotation. So when you join a crew, you're in a four-man rotation. Unlike hockey with the linesmen and the referees, they just stick to their certain positions.
Right.
You know, so we'll go from the plate, we go to third base, second base, first base, then back to the plate. And if that's how it works out, if on any given night, we don't change the rotation around. It's your plate job. It doesn't matter if it's a Sunday night baseball game or the Tuesday night game, you know, in a small city. So it's whoever it falls and the rotation, that's what we do. So we don't change it at all.
Awesome. Okay. And last but certainly not least, I wanted to ask this. You know, you're an umpire. Do they, in that pro school, do they teach you? We talked about Joe Girardi here. Do they teach you? Can they teach you to have a tough skin, or you just got to have that when you get into this business?
I think you can only teach so much. You can't teach instincts. I don't think you can teach tough skin at all. You could definitely teach rule books. You could teach positioning. You could teach all that. But sometimes there's a lot of stuff that's instinctual. Where I think it's just kind of how you're built as a human being. Definitely, it's not for everybody. Some people can handle it, some people can't. And I think it's just something that I've, I guess maybe I have a tougher skin, and you just can't let it bother you when you know. And you're just, at the end of the day, it's a job. You gotta handle it however it is. And when you punch the time clock at the end, it's done. Sort of thing.
Hey, when's your season begin here? I know the pitchers and catchers reporting and everything like that, and now we're getting into the spring league. When does your season get going here?
Yeah, I'm reporting. I fly out tonight, and then I'm flying out to Arizona, and that's where I'm going to spend my month in spring training. My season officially will start in about 6-7 hours when I hop on a plane to get down to Arizona, and then about a month in spring training, you know, and then right back in the road, right to season. So it's definitely, it's coming up quick, and the short seasons always get shorter and shorter, but, you know, it is what it is. That's the job I've picked, and, you know, I enjoy every day of it.
Well, no kidding, man. You get to live a dream. I'll tell you what, this guy here started from the grassroots RMF through high school, through the Thunder, and now he's a Major League Baseball umpire, third-born Canadian to do it right here from Regina in Saskatchewan. It's Stuart Sherwater. Thanks for this, Stu, and we'll be watching and cheering you on, okay?
Thanks, Ballsy. Thanks for having me.
And the Growing the Game podcast brought to you by Mako Collision Repair. If you've had an uh-oh and want it perfect again, better get Mako Collision Repair at 2330 7th Avenue. Thanks to Alan Mann and Joe Cardiff and the gang for supporting the community and football at large here in the province. Joining me on the phone now is Steve Bryce, head coach of the University of Regina Rams, old teammate of mine. Steve, we've got an alumni event coming up March the 10th, which I talked about in the last podcast, but it's going to involve our friend Chris Getzlaff, who's going to be roasted.
Yeah, I think it's going to be an exciting night. It's I'm giving a brief State of the Union with the Rams address to the alumni, and it's going to be a fun night. Chris Getzlaff's a good guy, and there's some great people involved in that night.
Yeah, you know, you talk about Chris Getzlaff. You have Chris Bauman come from the Rams. You had Jordan Cisco. You had Jason Claremont. John Ryan was a good receiver with the Rams back in the day. I mean, Mitch Pickton. The list goes on and on. Definitely a good stable of receivers in Ram Nation over the years and in years to come. And I see one of your recent signings would add to that in Bennett Stusek.
Yeah, Bennett's going to be a solid contributor fairly quickly for us. I think he's an outstanding young receiver. He's a very cerebral football player, a high-character kid. We're looking forward to big things out of him and a number of athletes that we got, especially a receiver and other positions.
Yeah, you know, I want to talk about a couple of the other positions. Tell us about that stud linebacker out of Virginia for a second.
Yeah, he's Peyton Ryder, really good kid. I watched his film, and he cold-called us in the first place and sent his film, and I'm watching his film. How is this guy not going D1? And if he was 6 foot tall, he'd be playing at Virginia Tech or Virginia. He's, there's some metrics that the NCAA Division I schools stick to. And, they want their tackles at 6'8", and they want their linebackers at 6'2", 6'3". And he's 5'9", so he doesn't fit their measurables, but he sure fits us by the way he plays.
No, I look at his stats, kind of just his body makeup and stuff. He kind of, I think, undersized guy, but covers the field well. Adam Big Hill, an Adam Big Hill kind of guy.
Yeah, he totally. Like Zach Thomas from Miami Dolphins.
Yeah.
I learned a long time ago, you don't judge a football player by his size. I was taught that lesson because I believed in those metrics too, coming out of college and starting my coaching career. But some guys will really change your mind on that by how they play and how tough they are and their intensity. And I think that's what this kid brings. He brings an intensity, a ferocity. He's a hard-hitting football player. He'll be a quick impact guy, too.
Okay, so we're looking for life after Noah Pickton. I know you still have him for 1 year, but every good program has to keep looking forward. You have Seb Britton in the fold, but you added a guy in Josh Donnelly from Leboldus who has a championship background that he brings to the table.
He does. He's an extremely cerebral football player. He watches a ton of film, and that's one of the things that separates Noah from the pack as far as caliber of quarterback play in this league is Noah watches as much film as any coordinator does. And I believe Josh Donnelly is going to be cut from that same mold, from the same high school program. And I think that Josh is going to take over down the road at some point in time. He's going to have to compete to get there because I don't think Seb Britton is going to just step aside and let anybody take the spot. But I expect some fierce competition to that spot. And either way, the Rams will come out the winner because we're going to end up with a great quarterback.
How's Josh's passing arm looking? I know I talked to him. It was bothering him last year, and I think he had some procedure in the offseason. Did that concern you at all? How is that progressing?
No, he's young. He's athletic. Even with torn labrum, I think it was, he was still able to deliver and play solidly throughout the Canada Cup and throughout his high school season. He's had it surgically repaired. He's going through all the proper procedures and rehab through our therapist at the university now. And we have some great care in place for him to get him back to 100% or better. I expect him to come back stronger than ever and be an outstanding gunslinger for us in the pocket.
Okay, the schedule is out, and you look at the makeup of this schedule. You get the U of S Huskies twice, which is nice to have that provincial rivalry twice on the docket. How do you like your schedule, which obviously starts with a preseason game against Manitoba here on the 22nd of August, and then you open up the first weekend in September against the Dinos?
Yeah, I think I like our schedule. I think we should always play U of S twice. I think a provincial rival team, every team should pick a rival and have them twice since we got to play some competitors two times anyway. So it should always be a rival. But our schedule, you know, it is what it is. We have great competition in this league. There's no easy games. You look at the last two seasons in a row, and we were beaten by the bottom team in our conference. Like, our last place team could go to other conferences and come in first, possibly. So, I mean, it's every weekend, it's a wild ride. It's a playoff competition every weekend in this league. And I like what we have. I like our competition on our team, and I like what we have coming back. And I like our schedule. I think that, you know, we open up strong. We have Calgary up front. And having Saskatchewan twice is solid for us, too.
Okay, Coach Bryce joining us here, Growing the Game podcast, brought to you by Mako Collision Repair. Just before I let you go, Coach, tell you what, Nick Cross is as advertised coming out of Lobolis. What an unbelievable football player. But unfortunately, doesn't look like you're going to have him in the fold this year. Tell us about that.
Well, we're not certain. I'm not going to count him out. He had a torn Achilles at practice a few weeks back. He's already had surgery on it. He's already got his cast off. He's already begun his rehab. He's an amazing athlete. He's resilient. The kid's tough as nails. And I say you're foolish if you want to count him out for the season, because if anybody can get back to 100% in that period of time, it would be Nick.
You've coached the likes of Marvin Jones and those kind of guys, and we know who Marvin Jones is back in California. Where does Nick Cross fall into your line of thinking when you're looking at players and just doing the eyeball test? When you first saw him, maybe the first couple of games, where does he fall in amongst the guys you've coached?
He'd be top five. He'd be in that top five discussion for sure. Like, I would even say that in high school, Marvin wasn't the best athlete I've ever coached. I would say, like, if I was to do a hierarchy, I'd say Chris Singleton, who was a first-team All-American running back, 2,200 yards rushing in high school. He was probably the best overall athlete. Kid rolls in grade nine with an eight-pack and wins our high school slam dunk competition in grade nine. I've never seen an athlete quite like Chris Singleton. He'd be in the NFL if he didn't tear two ligaments in his knee in one game against UCLA. But yeah, I would say Nick Cross is up there. He's as good a kid coming out of high school as I've seen. We put out some great talents at the school he's at in California, and Nick would have fit in perfectly there.
Overall, just to wrap up, we talked about Donnelly, we talked about Stusik, we talked about Ryder. Are you happy with your recruiting class this year and the guys you've been able to obtain and maybe keep right here in your own backyard?
Yeah, I think there's a whole idea. I think you brought it up. The terminology you used was, you need to build a wall around Regina or even around Southern Saskatchewan. I think we've done a good job of doing that. We keep all of our athletes in Regina. I talked to the other CanWest coaches, and they're almost to the point where it's not even really worth our while to go to Regina to get a top-shelf kid because they already know they're coming here.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good sign if you've done that for sure. And we didn't mention even the likes of Josh White and Alan Ford's grandson, Jackson Ford. Both of them come from a championship program too, along with Stusik with Campbell. So, and just talk about that for a second, bringing that championship mentality to the Rams. You're bringing winners in already, young guys, albeit, but they're winners.
Yeah, I'm a firm believer that culture is going to beat strategy, and culture is going to beat individual athleticism. So we're bringing in guys from championship programs and developing our own culture of that championship mentality. It's going to help having these guys with experience from these outstanding high school football programs. So it's not going to be hard to take Jackson Ford or Josh White and put them in leadership roles, and Josh Donnelly and the likes of that, and build a solid championship program here with the Rams, because these guys are coming in with that mentality and that hunger and that experience, and that's going to pay dividends for our team.
That's Coach Steve Bryce, head coach of the University of Regina Rams. Thanks for the Steve.
Thank you, Mike.
It's the Growing the Game podcast brought to you by Mako Collision Repair. If you've had an uh-oh and want it perfect again, better get Mako Collision Repair. Saying hi to Ryder center Dan Clark, and you were up for free agency, but you decided to stay home. How important was it for you to try to end your career as a Rough Rider?
You know what? It's always one of those things that it's always in the end game, and especially being from Regina and definitely growing up and looking up to the team and everybody that's been a member that's helped me grow and helped me succeed. And, I said it in the media, and I'll say it again, home is where my heart is, so it's always great to stay home.
Yeah, you know what? You're a testament to perseverance. You're a guy that's really scraped and clawed to get to where you're at. Who, you mentioned guys that helped you. What names popped to mind who helped you get to where you are?
Man, I'd have to. I right off my top of mind would be like Sheldon Neal, O-line coach in high school, and then with the Thunder, Jerry Thompson, Chuck Toss, moving all the way up to like pros. Jeremy O'Day was a big influence for myself. Then we move on to like Mark Parrino, Chris Best. And then just from there, being the guys around Labatt and Picard and, you know, even Heenan and seeing what, like, a true professional. And then you establish relationships with, like, Ben and myself and Patty Neufeld, all from Saskatchewan. And it's one of those things that grows and grows and grows. And you never want to, you know, it's all about not letting down the people that that believe in you.
Give a message to the young kids that listen to this podcast, you know, that are coming up and they want to be the next Dan Clark, be that guy. What kind of advice do you have for the young kids, football player-wise?
You know what? There's a lot of talented people in this world, and you know what? They sometimes they take that for granted. And when we talk about talent, it's just not about the things that you were given. But the one thing that I've always had that's, you know, kind of beat talent is hard work, heart. Those things you can always count on that. Your heart and your hard work and your effort is key. Yeah. And you're always going to have people that are going to doubt you, but make the right decision and stick to those things.
You know, Dan Clark joining us here on the Growing the Game podcast, outstanding center for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. We'll get into your off-season work, which is just as vital as the on-season, on-field work, actually. Okay, but I wanted to ask you this. How big was the Thunder program in your development? Because sometimes junior football gets overlooked, and Scott McCauley has continued a pretty good program over there with the Thunder.
You know what? It's a program that, you know, it's a hard road to travel, and then it's definitely, it took a lot of perseverance, like you said, but it's a great program. You know, you go up against easily the top team in the league every year with the Saskatoon Hilltops, and it's something that makes you a better program and establishes what they've done to change that program with the Thunder to make us competitive every year. I look guys like Paul Waldo, Getzlaff, Ivan Brown. These are people that I've followed in their footsteps. You look at a guy like Stu Ford.
Zach Evans.
Zach Evans, and those are things that you look at those opportunities that the Thunder are given to players, but also a lot of people don't look at your rights belong to that team that you're near in the province. Mm-hmm. So you automatically, you show up on game day, you show up to practice, you're a good player on the field, you're a good player in the community. You're going to get your opportunity to be able to go and have a shot to make professional without even having to go through the combine and all that. And there's nothing against that. Yeah. It's just a harder road that a lot of people don't think that there's a possibility.
But there is, and Dan Clark, a shining example of how you could do that. So were you always a good speaker, Dan? Like, you're on the public speaking tour, and we'll get to that in a second. Were you always, did you always like the microphone?
No, I was terrible. I still don't like the microphone. I still get scared. As soon as the microphone, like, they're like, here's a mic. I'm like, no way, I'm good. I don't want to talk. But, no, it's something that it's taken time, just like football. It's taken different, you know, learning from your mistakes that you make or learning from not being able to keep a crowd. Those are things that, you know, you establish. And, you know, the Riders give us such a great platform. And just being having the fortunate to be able to work with the Red Cross has even added to it.
Yeah, you know, you are taking the whole role model thing to the next degree. You're working with the Red Cross, the anti-bullying. I know coming up here Wednesday, we've got Pink Day here. Were you bullied as a kid, or were you a bully, Dan?
I was bullied. You know, I dealt with a lot of things with how big I was and my size. And you know what? I definitely, looking back, if I would have known what I know now, there's a lot more that I could have done for myself.
What kind of message do you give to kids when you're out and about? I know as we talk now, you're going to Looseland for another speech. First off, how many of these speeches do you give a year?
So between myself, last year myself, Nick Dembski, Spencer Moore, and Jorgen Hoos, we hit 37,000 students. So we're about one out of every three students has been able to, you know, get a form of imagine no bullying from one of us. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely that opportunity to be able to go from the top of Saskatchewan to the bottom and everywhere in between.
What kind of message do you give, Dan?
My message that I like to give is let the kids know that they're not alone. That it's 310-pound offensive lineman for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders that have been in their shoes. If they're dealing with verbal bullying, physical bullying, all the way to cyberbullying, we've dealt with that. We've been down that road. And that's the biggest thing as adults. We're always, I think, a little bit afraid to open up about our stories, and that's something that has given me the opportunity to be able to share with the kids.
You're still kind of bullied. Now, I know fans could pay their money, and they pay their hard-earned money, and they say what they want to say, although I don't necessarily agree with that mentality, but that's the mentality of a lot of fans. But, you know, you're kind of bullied still. People boo the Riders, boo Dan Clark, and maybe even attack you on social media. So you still get a taste of that, so you can relate to the kids. And, man, is it tough being a kid these days? A lot tougher than when we were growing up, because you got bullied at school, but you could maybe get away from it when you got home. Now with social media, everything's turned. Bullying's full time.
Yeah, and you think about that. That's 24/7, 365, right? That follows you everywhere. That is an opportunity. Every time we have a cell phone in our hand, or, you know, we use social media, that's at your disposal every day. And I guess if you look at us as professional athletes, it's something that, you know what, we are at that level that we need to deal with it. And you know what, it's about what kind of representative do you want to give to the people that you're motivating. So for me, it's the kids. For me, backlashing at a fan for something that they want to say about me, does that look good to a child? No, it doesn't. And for me to have that opportunity to be able to be a role model in that situation, that's something that I choose to do.
How tough is it for you, Clarky, though? You know, it's great. This is a great place to play when you're winning and you're a local boy. How tough can it be, though, when you're losing? How do you deal with the stress?
My stress is my family. Like, my family has always had my back, and my close friends, they always be there for me. But the same thing is, you know, when we're out in the public and fans talk to us, they're like, yeah, we went through a stage where, like, we were 8-28. We sucked. we get that. We understand that. Like, we don't go out there physically knowing and mentally knowing, hey, guys, lose this game.
Yeah.
But it's just one of those things. And you know what? It falls down to it as a professional athlete, and you have every opportunity, and it just comes down to that day wasn't the day.
Do you have a story?
So for me,
sorry, go ahead. Finish.
No, and it comes down to the fact that, you know what, as professional athletes, we need to deal with it. We need to understand that, like you said, the fans pay the money, and they everybody has a right to a voice. And that's something that we all need to understand.
Dan Clark joining us here, Growing the Game podcast, as he travels up to Looseland, Saskatchewan for a Imagine No Bullying speaking engagement once again with the Red Cross. Pink Day coming up here on Wednesday, the 28th of February. Now, I got to ask you this question with regards to public speaking. Is there a story, without maybe naming names, where you kind of, you know, you touched a couple of kids and that just kind of warms your heart? I guess where I'm going at here is it's great to win football games, to win championships, but do you get as much reward off the field doing what you're doing right now?
Definitely. You know, I used to tell my story that if I had the opportunity to affect little Dan in the crowd and hopefully be very proud of big Dan, and then the things that I speak about, if I could use those as a child back then, it would have helped me. But what I look at now is, instead of just telling kids about bullying is, you know, you shouldn't do this or you shouldn't do that, it's more of a call to action. And the action that students do nowadays, and it makes an opportunity for my soon-to-be 2-year-old little daughter to grow up in a better province. So for me, it's really touching when I can bring more of a family atmosphere for myself into it. But I look at it all the way up to, you know, being able to spend time with kids after the presentation and maybe play dodgeball. When a kid understands that social bullying, being picked last in gym class, is always can be a case of it. And then the kid being, hey, I'll go last. That's so rewarding when your message actually sticks and makes it home to them.
All right, bud. Lastly, damn schedule. September the 15th, you guys are playing Ottawa here at home. I know you got to earn your bacon by playing on the field, but Metallica is in Saskatoon. You know, in 2003, I had tickets to go see them along with Godsmack, and there's no good excuse, but I didn't go. I gave them to my buddy, and I'm thinking, okay, I got to see these guys before they're done, and now because I'm broadcasting your games, I can't go. Damn Metallica and damn Riders. Hey, Dan?
Yeah, it's something that it's once in a lifetime, but you got to earn that paycheck and put food on the table.
You got that. Hey, what's your pump-up music? What do you listen to before the game?
I'm everything. You know, lately I've been more calm than anything, especially moving into the role of center.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of got to be on your P's and Q's at that point and be able to assert yourself in the game a little bit more mentally. So it's little light stuff.
Like what? Tell us.
Oh man, if we looked at it. I've got everywhere from, you know, rap to, you know, light metal to light everything. You know, a little little bit of country. I think blues rubbed off on me a little bit, but
okay, cool.
It's definitely something. You know, Scott McHenry and I used to listen to Radioactive before every game, so that was something that we always used to enjoy.
All right, cool. Okay, Clarkie, we'll let you go here. I know it's a busy time for you, but we'll stay in touch. We're looking forward to a great year. You got, hey, looks like the off-season moves. This team is set up for a nice run here, my friend. No pressure or anything.
No. If you look out on paper right now, we're looking to be a killer team. But you know what? I guess the real test is when we find out in about middle of May when we all get together.
Yeah,
and that's when we'll establish a brotherhood that we're going to continue through the locker room and continue to prove a lot of people wrong.
Dan Clark, one of the good guys, one of the guys staying in our community, born and raised, and he's going to be a Rough Rider again this year. Thanks, Dan.
Thank you so much for having me. You guys have a great day.
And our Growing the Game podcast continuing here, brought to you by Mako Collision Repair. If you've had an uh-oh and want it perfect again, better get Mako Collision Repair. We're going to wrap up the show here, talking with David Soli out of Saskatoon. Now, you were a member of the Huskies, but you've decided to take a little break from school, but you still want to play football, David.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, so tell us what your plans are now, my friend.
I want to take a step back from school. I'm looking for a job now, and hoping to help out the Hilltops the best way I can this year.
Yeah, now you're a kicker and a receiver. What's your favorite? I heard you're a great kicker. What's your favorite, receiver or kicker?
I like playing receiver, but I know I've been told I've been pretty good at kicking, so I've been keeping up with both of them.
I don't know if you paid attention or not, but there's one of my good friends is John Ryan, who's won a Super Bowl with the Seahawks, and he liked the kick and has done pretty good making a couple million a year. Kicking's a specialized position. Do you think you might focus on something like that? Like, do you have aspirations to play professional football, Dave?
I definitely have aspirations to play, but it's always – I just got to find the time to put in for both the kicking and the receiving right now, but I've spent some time kicking with a few of my coaches, which have helped me out a lot.
So what coaches have helped you out along the way in your – and first of all, how long have you been playing football for, David?
I've been playing since grade 7.
Okay, and what got you into the game?
What really got me in was watching my brothers play. Well, I guess my one brother, who is a little bit older than me. And so I like the contact of it, and so I said I want to try this out, and ever since then I fell in love with it.
So what coaches have helped you along the way, David?
My biggest influence on the game has definitely been Scott Hunza, but in the kicking aspects of thing, it's been Braden Sukan. He's the kicking coach of the Huskies right now, and he's helped me a lot along the way.
So is it something where you're just going to take a break for a while? You might go back to school, or you think you're just going to focus right now on being on a championship team like the Hilltops and see where that takes you down the line in football?
I think it all depends on what's going on with my situation right now. If I'm feeling up for school, I think I might step back in, but I'm happy where I am right now, so we'll see how long this lasts for.
Yeah, you know, you're joining a pretty good football team, too, in the Saskatoon Hilltops. They've won a few championships.
Yeah, just a few. Yeah.
What has Tom said to you about coming in and filling a role there?
He's just said he's not expecting anything much from me. He expects me to do my best, just like everybody else, and then that's what I can do, and I'm looking forward to a great season.
All right, that's David Soli from the Saskatoon Hilltops. We'll be following you at the junior level, okay, my friend?
Sounds good. Thank you very much.
This has been Growing the Game with Ballsy. If you have a football story you'd like to share to help us grow the game, email Michael Ball at mball@harvardbroadcasting.com.